In the future moving forward, do you ever see a place, an environment where police officers, school resource officers, won't be needed in our metro public national schools?
I hope there is a day where that exists. And you know, a lot of times we talk about, like we take national data and trends and we try to automatically apply it to every school district and every individual school.
Right.
You know, I would challenge one to also think about maybe why some things haven't happened,
right?
And part of this planning that we do with MMPD is proactive measures as well. I mean, they're helping us build our entire plan
right
now in response to all the things that are happening around us. My hope and dream is that we continue to build positive culture and climates, that we can set conditions, that we can close the equity gap and getting students what they need earlier, making sure those resources are out in our communities as well, because a lot of the challenges we see in our schools really stem from what's happening in the community.
Right.
And until we kind of address community needs and changes, we're going to continue to kind of be in our continuous improvement model around how our schools can be responsive, particularly around safety, mental health, and social emotional learning.
Welcome to another episode of Slice of the Community. I'm your host, Jerome Moore, and today we have the director of MNPS Metro National Public Schools, Dr. Adrian Battle, with us. How you doing, Dr. Battle?
I'm doing great. Great to be here.
It's great to have you here. Let me go ahead and give you your flowers now. You've overcome, you've maneuvered, you have just really just done amazing things over the last couple of years since you became the director, from interim to officially being director. So I want to go ahead and give you your flowers and congratulate you right now for just an amazing job in keeping MNPS afloat and keeping morale high.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. First of all, I appreciate the invitation to be here. I'm looking forward to our conversation today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been such a humbling, just honored opportunity to serve the district that prepared me as a young student. But I must say, you know, I'm serving as the director of schools or superintendent, as I'm often referred to, but it takes the whole team.
Right.
It takes the community. And I'm just blessed to have such great people that I work with and awesome students that I get an opportunity to serve.
And so I want to start like right at the fundamental level, because you're just not a director, right? You're a whole individual that have other things going on in life. So I want to talk about the people that champion you, the people that gives you that motivation to keep going or inspires you to take on new challenges, that family support, that peer support. Who are those people? What does that look like?
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for even entering into this space, because I definitely wouldn't be who I am today without my support system. Means the world to me. You know, and I'm reflecting back on my journey and, you know, becoming director of schools. A lot of people didn't know that I had just given birth to my first son.
Wow.
I think coming in as interim, I was expecting my now youngest son. They're both now respectively 5 and 3.
Okay.
I'm a mother. I am a professional educator. I'm a sister. I mean, I have two brothers who support me to the end and back. My mother, of course, I give her all the kudos and thanks, because she has just pushed me and supported me along in my life. My husband, who is also a professional educator, who supports me greatly. And because I'm a native Nashvillian, I have to give a kudos to my entire family, who, for the most part, lives here in Nashville, serves as a support system to me, to my family, are truly advocates, have supported me from day one when I aspired to be an educator, my friends who I grew up with, just this community. I mean, Nashville has been very supportive of me even before being a director.
Right.
But quite frankly, being a female superintendent, you know, and we can talk a whole lot about the stats
and
what that looks like, but it requires a support system.
Right.
Undoubtedly, we have the chops to get the job done.
Right.
But as a mother, sister, daughter, wife, It requires a support system. Right. And again, would not be in this position where I am today without their full support.
Right. And I want to talk about that a little bit, being the first woman in this position and then being a Black woman at that adds a different type of layer underneath that. What does that mean to you personally, especially from those who might be looking outside in and have inspiration of being an educator or a director, or just knowing that it's possible that it can be done as a woman and as a Black woman?
Yeah, I mean, let me be clear, and I share this with our students all the time. You can be whatever you choose to be, whatever you aspire to be. And it's important, I mean, the significance of being the first product of Metro Nashville Public Schools serving in this capacity, being the first woman ever to serve Metro Nashville Public Schools. I mean, in my time in preparing as a professional educator, I didn't see those two things, right? And in some ways, it can limit you in what you envision for yourself because you've not seen it happen. And so I hope my journey and my commitment to opening doors and to inspiring other African-American females on their respective journey. I hope it's education, because that's the thing I do every day, but whatever it may be, that they too can achieve their dreams. And my dream originally was to be a professional educator. And just thinking about the impact I was having over time, my only desire was to have greater impact.
Right.
And when you're in this work, it's selfless work, it's hard work. If you stay focused, those pathways of success will continue to build for them. I mean, as an expecting director of schools, just having conversations with women from all backgrounds, right? Just the conversations around, we can, we can too. Right, we don't have to be limited in certain roles and positions, and we know if we're looking at the stats and the data here locally in the state and nationally, I mean, women are woefully underrepresented, and when you think about African American women, I mean, that number is even smaller.
Right.
And so I hope that through my work, through my passion, I can continue to inspire others to be that professional educator at the top, but also to be a great wife. And mother and sister, whatever capacity.
And Nashvillian.
And Nashvillian, there you go. I mean, I'm extremely proud to be the first Native Nashvillian serving in this capacity.
I want to talk about that transition a little bit. Some would say before your transition into this director role, it was a little low point, melancholy kind of feeling around MNPS. About like who was gonna be that next director. A lot of challenges, a lot going on. What ultimately said, yes, I wanna see this, I wanna take on this challenge, or maybe I see opportunity.
Yeah, so.
This is 2019, right?
2019, April of 2019. And, you know, transparently, I've been serving in the district for quite some time. Fortunately or unfortunately, I've seen several directors of schools kind of come and go. I've been able to observe all the politics around it. And naturally, when you're about our kids and giving them what, you don't really want to enter into the politics of education, right? I mean, you're about the work and getting it done and getting outcomes. And so it wasn't kind of a pursuit for me as far as being the director of schools. But we're in a place where, quite frankly, it was just praying to do God's will and not my own. Not to go too spiritual on you, but then there's this space of if not you, then who? Right? I care deeply about Nashville. I care deeply about our young people. Almost my entire career has been spent in Metro Nashville Public Schools, and I know the aspirations of the capabilities of our students. I know the greatness in our teachers and our staff. And it was an opportunity to say, let's shine. We can get this done. Is it complex work? It is. Is it going to take some tough skin and some long days and nights and weekends? It will. But this is an opportunity for a native Nashvillian who kind of knows our school system, worked alongside thousands of our teachers and employees, had touch points with students along the way, to take that, right, without the learning curve, that can be so great as a director of schools to accelerate the very district who helped me, right, again, land in this particular position.
And I think this speaks to your leadership, right? And leadership can look different for many different people. People evaluate leadership differently. They exercise their leadership differently. And so I want to get into, like, what steps along the way, right, during your whole tenure as a teacher, you know, you won so many awards just in education in general, impacting education here in MBPS. What are some of those things of, like, leadership lessons or just little gems that you learned that prepared you for the position that you're in now as director?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing I think about is just my journey in general. Like, I knew as early as third grade, again, my parents argued with me much earlier, we knew, maybe that's as early as you remember, that I wanted to be an educator.
Okay.
I knew that. I studied education. Even in high school, I was a part of the education child care program at John Overton High School. Went off to college, studied education. Although I went on an athletic scholarship, I knew I wanted to come back and teach in Metro Nashville Public Schools. I served in multiple capacities. For me, it was about that lifelong learning. Right. I've just always been a learner. And that's something that not only my parents and my family poured into me, but all the teachers and support staff that I interacted with as a young person growing up. And I was always in awe by their ability to inspire, pour into me and my friends and my other classmates. And it was just like, it just felt like magic to me.
Right.
Like, how do you, and so it led me to really studying, like the art of growing students, but also inspiring others, particularly adults, to respond to the need of our students. And so studied multiple positions from teacher to principal to coach and assistant superintendent or a community superintendent, that all prepared me for the role. But when I think about the adults in my life and the leaders I experienced, they cared about people.
Right.
They empowered people. It was never about them. Mm. It was about the vision and executing on that. And so it's those nuggets that really inspired me to stay focused, stay in the profession that I love, and continue to give back.
People will see your position as being a very powerful position, you know, director, superintendent of all Metro Nashville Public Schools. What is your definition of power, and how do you use this quote-unquote power to make sure you're doing all those things, being a good leader, empowering people, giving people opportunities, creating chances, being a representative for those who may want to be future educators?
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't see it that way. For me, it's not about being in control or having authority or having power. It's about my opportunity to empower others.
You see power as an opportunity to empower others.
That's right. That's right. Because here's the thing. I'm one leader.
Right.
I see all of our staff, including our students, as leaders.
Right.
And it's my responsibility to use my platform, my position, to empower everyone to perform at their greatest.
Right.
And so it's not about me. It's about how can I set a compelling vision? How can I inspire and promote action to get us where we need to be? So it's actually my opportunity then to just empower others, but not to control,
right,
if you will, how others respond or capping the talents and the opportunities for our students.
I always like asking leaders that power question because everybody views power differently. Some people view it as a negative thing, like trying to control people. But from what you're breaking down, which I love to see, is when a leader is using power to say, no, I see this as an opportunity to actually give people power, not control them with whatever power that I have. Another power came into play, the power of Mother Nature,
The one we can't control.
The one we can't control. We had a tornado here in Nashville, follow up by pandemic, COVID-19 pandemic. I want to dive into that a little bit.
Okay.
You know, you're freshly new, officially at this point, maybe a couple weeks before unanimously voted by the school board to be our superintendent, our director. A week or two go by, tornado, pandemic. What was your first initial thoughts when all this, when before you can even make a decision or call anybody, what was you thinking? What was Dr. Battle thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I think the initial Reaction was, okay, I mean, I've not, like, there's no playbook.
Right.
Like, I've not experienced in any role I've been in, mm-hmm. like, navigating a devastating tornado followed by a pandemic. Right. I mean, and the pandemic was really, yeah. like, an outlier for right. us. And so I thought, okay, you know, like, this is, you know, there's no testimony without a test.
Right.
So let's really dig deep around who we are. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, you know, while it was a challenging time, my challenges really probably weren't around what people perceived.
Okay.
Like, I typically got the, you know, like, things are hard.
Right.
And things were hard and things were complex. There were certain things that were easy about right. navigating the tornado and the pandemic. And that was just simply, I know what's best and good for kids. Mm-hmm. I know what's best and good for our staff.
Right.
And I've learned from and received so much feedback from our parents and our community.
Right.
And, like, keeping the right thing at the forefront of decision making, the decisions weren't the hard part.
Right.
I mean, the hard part was navigating the politics of
right.
it all, because there's so many opinions about education in general.
Right.
And then, you know, unfortunately, something that was unknown to most of us.
How do you navigate something like that, especially something that there's no playbook for? Mm-hmm. For example, with the pandemic, mm-hmm. some people wanted a mask mandate, mm-hmm. some people didn't. How did you mm-hmm. handle those things? What was your process? Some people was okay with remote learning. Mm-hmm. Some people was like, hey, I need my kids to be in the classroom.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some things that you just can't waver on because, you know, right. again, what's good for kids and your staff versus not. But my commitment was to, again, the research.
Mm-hmm.
Research-based decisions, talking to the experts.
Right.
Right. I, in my own right, if you will, expert in education.
Right.
Right. I'm not a health expert. Mm-hmm. So it was about really paying attention right. to the research and the data and the experts. That's what helped me navigate it, was right. Just staying in tune and being consistent
right.
with what direction our experts and our data and our research-based practices were pushing us towards. Again, nothing about it was easy because right. in an ideal space, I mean, there is no pandemic for one,
right.
but kids are in school, they're learning. Right. We know that is the primary method or mode by which we want to educate our students, but the pandemic made that extremely hard. And it's one factor around students being in, but I also have to make sure that operationally,
right.
I can support the learning of our students
right.
when they're in our buildings. And so it was just kind of turning down the distractions,
mm-hmm.
focusing on our young people, aligning that with the research, the expertise of those in the space who were studying and had the background knowledge to make those informed decisions.
I think the pandemic and a tornado, but more specifically the pandemic, I think opened up the Pandora's box, right?
Mm-hmm.
Around something I know is really important, not only to you and the whole team at NPS, but I think to everybody, which is equity,
mm-hmm.
right? Social and emotional learning, mm-hmm. all of these things. When did you realize, or what did the pandemic do, right? And kind of exacerbate mm-hmm. and say, hey, whoo, whoa,
yep.
whoa.
Like, yes.
we have kids that don't have internet mm-hmm. access mm-hmm. to learn remotely. We have kids that don't have laptops.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you do have a learning disorder, how do we, like, how did yeah. you all tackle all these things or go back and mm-hmm. say, okay, now we had to create mm-hmm. this equity roadmap because this pandemic mm-hmm. showed us, you know, we have some things we need mm-hmm. to work on. How did you tackle that? What was that process like?
Yeah.
When did that hit you? Because historically, we know there's always been inequities mm-hmm. in education, especially for black and brown folks that look like me mm-hmm. and you, just historically in this
yeah.
country. And now you have a pandemic mm-hmm. that says, okay, I'm going to show this to you even more.
Yeah.
So some people who may not even been aware was now aware, or some people who tried to ignore it mm-hmm. could no longer ignore it.
So true. I mean, first of all, thank you for highlighting the fact that a lot of these issues, I mean, there's historical context,
mm-hmm.
one, why they existed,
right,
and our inability to address them quick enough. So pre-pandemic,
right,
they
exactly.
were there. And so in a lot of ways, we knew exactly what those inequities were.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we knew them.
Right.
We have been a district that's been woefully underfunded, like many districts across the country. And so while the pandemic was hard, there was some good that came out of the pandemic.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about it. So now we have so much conversation
right.
about the inequities, right? We're virtual. We're at home, right? We
mm-hmm.
could not open the physical doors of our schools.
Right.
Our students don't have the technology that they need.
Right.
We'd been dreaming and talking about and planning for one-to-one technology for over a decade.
Right.
Had not been able to execute on that because of funding sources, the investments were not there. Well, now all of a sudden, we need the technology in the hands of our students. And I'm thankful. We have great partnership with Metro Council, the mayor, they responded. We were able to achieve in just a couple of weeks something that had taken, I mean, years to even get to the forefront. When you're talking about food insecurity, right? When you're talking about housing insecurity, when you're talking about the mental health needs of our students and their social emotional learning competencies, now all of a sudden, you know, we're seeing it at home,
right?
And parents, I thank them because I know the struggle and the impact it had on families. But now we're able to see, you know, we have a front row seat to what's happening and how complex it is when we're talking about educating our young people. So I think that's some good that came out of this. Let's talk about the value of our educators and our bus drivers and our nutrition services work. Yes, they responded. But now we see that there is a great demand, and quite frankly, it started with the tornado and it increased and accelerated throughout the pandemic. We now have this response as our schools being the hub of our community. Right? And so we're the hub of the community and we have a responsibility to respond to all the community needs. Then we should invest in that same community with or without a pandemic. And so there are some things that I look at as pandemic keepers. We're, our goal now is to be better than normal. We're not trying to return to the state we were in 2019. We're trying to learn from what happened, eliminate those inequities. So we're talking about technology. We're talking about right now we've invested in providing meals for every student, no cost. Breakfast and lunch. Why are we just in 2022 getting to this space? We're talking about now having direct services provided to students in school, where we're not hoping and wishing there's some community connection out there. We're working with our community partners to come in. I mean, we're expanding in so many different ways now that we have these advocacy centers and peace centers in our schools, so that we have a direct response when a student becomes unregulated. We're adults, it happens to us. So we have to have the supports in our schools so we can have those conversations. There were also some unfortunate conversations that came through this platform throughout the pandemic. Right now we're challenging the books in our classrooms. We have this rhetoric around critical race theory. I mean, you name it. Now we're talking about you know, the value of our teachers, and we know good and well that our teachers have been the core, the backbone to our city, to our country, and preparing every student for every industry, in as adults and in their professions. And so lots of conversations about the inequities, but now we're in a space where more people are paying attention so that we can actually do something about it. We're closing the gap, but we're not where we need to be.
How can community be a part of that closing the gap? Because again, it's like, this is just not about students, it's about also guardians and parents that are sending their kids to these schools that, you know, that, that we want to be great, that we want to, all of them to be award-winning schools, right? How can community be a part of that? And is there any kind of rhetoric that hurts that, that comes out of community? Misnomers, myths, or whatnot that you can touch on?
Listen, I will be the first to tell you that in this thing called education, teachers, superintendents, principals, counselors, nurse, name the role, we cannot do it alone. It takes strong parent engagement, family engagement. It takes community partnerships. It takes community leaders. It takes everyone really marching to the same tune. Like, we need to be clear about what we want to be true about at least our young people here in Nashville, but it takes that public-private partnership. Like, our doors are open. We want the partnerships. Even if it means reading to a student, even if it means serving as a tutor in our accelerating scholars program, even if it means being a guest speaker, even if it means if you're out and about midday and you see a young person who should be in school, ask them where they should be. Because it shows that our community cares about them and we're invested in their educational opportunities. I mean, on the other side, as you mentioned, it can be unhelpful, particularly when you hear conversations about, what one assumes to be true,
right,
in our schools, particularly when, you know, you follow up and you've not even been in one of our schools in 20 years.
Right.
Like, come in and right. see and be a part of the solution.
Right.
It is so unhelpful mm-hmm. to just create narratives,
right.
to have a platform
exactly.
for whatever reason. If we are truly about getting this thing right,
mm-hmm.
then we should be advocating, rallying around right. what we're going to do
right.
to help move the needle for our kids.
I wanna get on this like even deeper, like mm-hmm. community conversation, mm-hmm. right? As you know, this is a hot topic, school resource officers, mm-hmm. SROs,
mm-hmm.
And that, which is kind of built in around, I think, social emotional learning, mm-hmm. equity. We know that black and brown students at the moment are suspended 3 times as more than their white counterparts. Some may say that the interaction with police for those students may cause more suspension or just confusion about the presence of mm-hmm. SROs, right? And just to be clear, I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, that there's an MOU mm-hmm. between MNPD and MNPS.
That's correct.
SROs do not come out of your budget.
No, they do not.
You know, do not come out of, but it's an MNPD budget.
That's
I just
right.
want to make that clear, make sure mm-hmm. that's out there. Just to get
yeah.
around the confusion
yeah.
that people may have,
mm-hmm.
what is the role of school resource officers in Metro Nashville Public Schools?
Absolutely. First of all, I have to say I'm very cognizant
mm-hmm.
of the data
okay.
and the disproportionality. We're very transparent about our focus and our intentionality.
It's in the equity roadmap.
It's in the equity roadmap.
Y'all are very transparent.
And we are seeing movement in the right direction. I care about our young people, and I care about the statistics of how we're, I mean, you can, early on, I mean, we have data as early as third grade that projects out,
right.
you know, the outcomes for students as an adult. And we're not just sitting back and doing nothing about it. We're pouring in and putting in these strategies. And one of the things you mentioned is our MOU with
right.
MNPD for our school resource officers in our buildings. And there's lots of misconceptions, particularly
yep.
around how SROs serve in Metro Nashville Public Schools. I can't speak for
right.
any other district or any state for that matter.
Right.
But in Metro Nashville Public Schools, our SRO officers are not there to be disciplinarians.
Okay.
They are not there to enforce the discipline policies of our schools.
Right.
They are there for as a safety measure, right? And unfortunately, we've had some tragic events happening in our schools with our young people. It just
mm-hmm.
breaks me when I think about
right.
That. They are there for when the law is being broken,
right.
and to also help plan with our school administrators, right? So it's this misconception. Our educators are trained in their content, they're trained in leadership, they're trained
mm-hmm.
in counseling, whatever their respective role.
Right.
MNPD has been a great partner, and I'm very appreciative to Chief Drake and his responsiveness to the needs of our school district to come alongside us
mm-hmm.
and help us create safety plans for
right.
our buildings, help pressure test those
yeah.
safety plans, and in the event of an emergency, actually be there to respond.
Right.
Right. So it's about that extra outlier support.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a previous principal, and I've worked hand in hand with our school resource officers for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And our kind of internal agreement was, I've got the school side of things. I've got our school operations.
Mm-hmm.
I've got our discipline. I need you here for our emergency response.
Right.
And so that's some of the work that they're doing in our schools. They're also working with us as a district to
right.
make sure that we're reviewing our safety plans and our drills and
right.
helping us stay updated with the research-based safety measures, right? So I'm very appreciative, again, of our partnership with MNPD. I'm glad that we have our MOU in place. Again, our school resource officers that are only in,
mm-hmm.
our armed officers are only in our middle schools and our high schools. Not elementary schools. And again, very cognizant
mm-hmm.
of that pipeline and building strong, positive relationships
right.
From the beginning. But they're there to help with particularly our external
right.
plans, but they will respond in the event of an emergency. But that MOU really outlines and dictates what that looks like inside of our schools.
In the future, moving forward, do you ever see a place, an environment where police officers, school resource officers, won't be needed in our Metro Public Nashville schools?
I hope there is a day
mm.
where that exists. And you know, a lot of times we talk about Like we take national data and trends and we try to automatically apply it to every school district and every individual school.
Right.
You know, I would challenge one to also think about maybe why some things haven't happened.
Right.
Right? And part of this planning that we do with MMPD is proactive measures as well. I mean, they're helping us build our entire plan
right
now in response to all the things that are happening around us. My hope and dream is that we continue to build positive culture and climates, that we can set conditions, that we can close the equity gap in getting students what they need earlier, making sure those resources are out in our communities as well, because a lot of the challenges we see in our schools really stem from what's happening in the community.
Right.
And until we kind of address community needs and changes, we're going to continue to kind of be in our continuous improvement model around how our schools can be responsive, particularly around safety, mental health, and social emotional learning.
It takes, it's a wraparound of a lot of different services. I think as you alluded to before, whether it's housing, food insecurity, education, what's happening at home, all of these things. I'm glad that you was able to really unpack that for us, because I think it's just a lot of narratives for people who, as you said, maybe haven't been to school or just seeing what's happening nationally. But I do want to talk about some of the things that's happened nationally and how's that kind of changed the environment of school is unfortunately school shootings, right? How has that changed emergency preparedness and being ready for that?
Yeah, you know, and I think I've spoken very publicly about this. We're going to do our part,
right?
If that means training, if it means resourcing the conversations we're having with our students, we're going to do that within reason, because I also understand my demographics and the students who look like me and you, as you've already mentioned.
41%, I think.
That's right.
Like that.
That's right. And so we're going to implement policies, procedures, and safety measures that protect them on both ends, right? So we're going to do our part. What is really needed is a national state response to what's happening. And I'm going to be quite blunt when I say this. We're not handing out weapons in Metro Nashville Public Schools.
Okay.
Right? We don't hand them out.
Right.
We respond based upon what shows up in our learning communities.
Right.
And so we need to be thinking about the laws that allow these weapons to be in hands of individuals who are sometimes incapable of making proper decisions, in the hands of our young people who legally should not have them, the types of weapons that our country allows,
right?
We have a new state policy that allows for more weapons to be in our communities. Our schools are here to educate our students. Part of our responsibility is to create safe learning conditions. So that's been a part of our DNA for years.
Right.
Based upon what's happening across the country, we are responding, we are tightening and stiffening some of those protocols and making sure we have the technology to be responsive. But I continue to call on our lawmakers who have the authority, the power, to make a change, to do so. That speaks volumes to our young people. They hear, they listen, they know the conversation,
right?
And so we need that type of leadership that will help us get where we need to be. And don't get me wrong, there are lots of leaders out there that are fighting every day to get movement in this space. But we're going to continue to do our part. If that means us revising, revisiting our plans, we're adding a new role to our elementary schools this year. We're in that process. But it, again, I'm calling on the community to help us respond, because we're not, we find them, we don't hand them out. We find them. And I'm not going to shy away from whatever data or metric is out there about us finding weapons, because that means that a child is safe, no one is harmed. And I keep empowering our team, follow our procedures, students follow our procedures. I'm proud that students are reporting, teachers are following protocols, our staff members are following protocols, and principals are not shying away from saying, not on this campus.
Right.
We're gonna create the safest conditions that we can.
Another national thing, and our state, you know, it's a slippery slope in our state on this with our lawmakers, but our gay community, right? When it comes to bullying, harassment, gender identities, How's MNPS responding to that, especially around the social and emotional mm-hmm. learning side of things, and making sure those students who identify with their community mm-hmm. are still treated the same, mm-hmm. creating that equity mm-hmm. environment?
Our mantra in Metro Nashville Public Schools is every student known. Mm-hmm. We want to know you, we value you, we're gonna support you, we see you,
right.
okay? And our student services department has led an initiative around MNPS for All. Our school board is leading the way on our resolutions and our policies that are inclusive of every student that we serve. I am proud of the student population that we serve in Metro Nashville Public Schools. We are very diverse.
Right.
And I mean, when you say diverse or diversity, you gotta embrace every bit of that.
Right.
And that's what we try to live by
right.
Every day in Metro Nashville Public Schools. And so I think, you know, what we lead by and our mantras and our initiatives exhibit our desire to
right.
bring all students in and to have them be known and their voices to be heard and
right.
for us to support them accordingly. You mentioned our equity roadmap. You mentioned our social emotional learning work. Like, we're about all students
right.
Getting what they need. Now, you know, when it comes to, like, we pay attention to hot topics around right. bullying and harassment. And you know, we're in a day and age where cyberbullying is probably at an all-time high,
right?
Because of social media and the devices that are in the hands of our students. And we're doing our part around training students about proper usage
right.
Of their technology.
Right.
But again, this takes community. It takes monitoring even at home and when, you know, we're at events and games and it takes constant monitoring. And we can't have assumptions that students know.
Right.
We've got to take the time to teach
right.
our students proper use, how to treat others.
Right.
What does it mean to be respectful and inclusive
right.
Of others as well? And so that's a space we're really paying attention to, but we're having to work with our parents,
mm-hmm.
our community leaders. We have policies and procedures internally
right.
That we hold students accountable to, but every student know, MNPS
right.
for all,
right.
that's what we're about.
A big thing I think it would be good for you to talk about is this, you know, funding. You know, everybody needs more money, especially for education. But, you know, we have been able to increase pay for our teachers, staff,
mm-hmm.
and things like that here in MPS, which is, you know, we needed that money. We needed those funds.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, some would say we're kind of underfunded from the state side,
mm-hmm.
right, which creates more challenges, budgetary challenges for you.
Yes.
You know, and for our city.
Mm-hmm.
How do we fix that? How do we maneuver around that? How do we pivot those financial challenges?
Yeah, I mean, great question. When you think about fundamentally the investments in school districts, like in theory,
mm-hmm.
right? The majority of investments in school districts should come from the state. It should be about a 70-30 split between state and local. And I mean, federal is usually a very small percentage, 1 or 2 percentage points of the overall budget. And in Nashville, and I'm specifically saying Nashville because
mm-hmm.
this is not true for most of the other districts in our state, it's flipped.
Right.
Right. So our local government funds about 70% of our budget, and the state
30%.
Funds about 30%. And, you know, there's all kinds of reason why we're shifting from BP into TESA, and we could
right.
talk about the fiscal capacity of Nashville. Regardless,
mm-hmm.
the needs of students in Nashville,
right.
right, matter. And so, you know, there is a need for advocacy and recognition that from
right.
the state level, we have to meet the unique needs of our students
right.
Here as well. But again, I'm thankful for the partnership with Metro Council, with the mayor, that the last two budget cycles, we've had historic investments.
Right.
It's helping us close the gap. I mean,
right.
we've been so woefully underfunded for so long
right.
that I can't say, again, we're where we need to be or that we've accelerated
right.
Beyond that point. And so what really needs to happen in this space, and we're taking the lead on some of this, we've changed the way in which we budget. We no longer kind of hope and wish, right?
Right.
Just put a number out there, hope and wish. We are very transparent
mm-hmm.
around our theory of action.
Right.
Here's where we are. Here's our ideal space. This
right.
is what investment it's going to take for us to get there.
Okay.
And then we hold ourselves accountable for moving the needle
okay.
in that direction. Large scale change doesn't happen overnight,
right.
but we should be able to progress monitor that we're moving in that direction. It's going to take advocacy, particularly at the local level in Nashville,
okay.
to just at the state level,
right.
them understanding the needs of Nashville. Them understanding that, you know, fiscal capacity aside,
right,
the state has an obligation,
exactly,
to fund our system at a level at which it does surrounding counties.
Right.
And so, as I mentioned, for Nashville, that's the model. That's not true for the majority of districts,
right,
in the state. And so we need our local leaders, our community, to continue to rally around and continue to demand,
right,
that there is an appropriate response to the funding that's needed,
right,
for us to get the outcomes that we need. We also have to understand that that's not always a vision of everyone,
right?
Right, but we have to demand it for our young people. And for way too long, we've been woefully underfunded. We need our city leadership to continue to invest, but we also need the state to invest in our young people as well. Can I also mention, teacher compensation.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We now have the highest paid teachers across the state. That is something that we have worked for some time towards. We had a significant investment in our support pay, even established a new pay scale for our transportation department and others. I mean, we have significant investments happening right now to lift the value of our employees who pour directly into our students. So when you think about compensation, sometimes we think about it as an adult. The majority of our budget is our employees,
right,
who work daily directly with our young people. So we're proud that Nashville is recognizing our educators, Team MMPS, in the way that they should. We've made a huge step forward, but we still got a long way to go.
Now, keeping the public schools, is there budding financial competition or even resources between public schools and charter schools?
I mean, generally speaking, you know, when I look at numbers and financials, and I hear the arguments of the pros and the cons, it comes back to the public district-run schools having the resources, as opposed to dividing out the resources, having the resources to provide the quality education we want for every student.
Right.
Now, in my role, it is my responsibility to lead and move forward with the mission and vision for our district schools, and that's where I spend the majority of my time. And I'm just, you know, just being transparent. Like, that is my responsibility. That is what my school board has hired me to do. And so I don't often get too deep in the weeds around that. But when you just look at financial models, that is where the argument comes around the pros and the cons. As a Nashville native, I want all young people. I mean, Nashville and Murfreesboro and Chattanooga, in Mississippi, I want all young people to be educated, to be educated, because it speaks to the quality of our profession. It speaks to the future for our country. And so that's where my focus has remained. But it's typically around like the ability to divide up the pie, and how many times can you divide up the pie and still provide quality services.
I want to kind of end off on the future. And when I talk about future, I want you to talk about a little bit about the successes of the current, and also how do we continue that advancement of education in a kind of post-ish pandemic kind of, you know, environment.
I mean, we're coming off a very successful school year last year, right? While there were critics about our pandemic response, what was going to happen next, there was researchers out there working against, you know, public education. They would take years for us to recover. And then coming out of last school year, again, 48 reward schools, reduction in priority schools, two of our wonderful schools that moved from priority to reward school status, level five district in growth. I mean, the highest level of growth that you can achieve in a single school year, second highest rating as far as achievement overall is concerned. I mean, lots of these measures we've either not seen before or haven't seen for years, like dating back to 2015, where there was a whole nother test and a whole nother system. So we're really excited about that. And we talked about the historic compensation and, I mean, just responses in every way for our students, increasing advanced academics and opportunities. And I mean, you name it, new curriculum that we're doubling down on, just making sure literacy, equity roadmap. So we have a roadmap, like we have a plan.
The foundation, people go look at it, it's there, it's available.
It's there. I am extremely optimistic about the future of Metro Nashville Public Schools, not because of Dr. Adrian Battle serving as director of school, because I get to see and witness every day the quality of education I mean, you just have a conversation with one of our students. Right. You're blown away.
Right.
All right, by their knowledge and by their connections, their plans right. for the future. We are working really hard right now on creating a system, a seamless system mm-hmm. of pathways that are tailored to the needs of our students. So we're launching an initiative from birth to kindergarten.
Oh, wow.
Right? We have another initiative on the other end called University MMPS, where we're trying to create seamless pathways from the time a student enters this world in Nashville
right.
to the time that they move into post-secondary and career opportunities into the right. workforce. They can see themselves along the way.
Right.
We've removed barriers to their access, thinking about the partnerships with Tennessee State University and Lipscomb and Belmont right. and more to come, so that students are not discouraged along the way.
Right.
We want our young people to focus on that learning, right?
Right.
Building their skills, their knowledge, their character,
right.
so that they're the ones at the front of the line when the Oracles come in
right.
and the Amazons expand, whomever, right?
right?
We want our students to have a toolbox by which when they graduate, it's not that I just have this, this is my only pathway,
mm-hmm.
and they have to choose me.
Right.
We want our students to have control over that. They will choose them. And so the future is bright for Metro Nashville Public Schools.
Anything that you want to avoid in the future?
Distractions.
Okay.
Right? Like, my board and I talk about this all the time. My administrative team, I talk to our principals about this all the time. Everyone, turn down the distractions. Turn them down. If we can, as a community, focus on what we want to be true for our young people,
mm-hmm.
Nashville, Metro Nashville, it's our North Star to become the premier large school district in Tennessee and beyond. That is achievable.
Right.
We're already achieving
right.
that in a lot of ways.
Right.
We've got to turn down the distractions. If it is not a conversation that helps us move the needle around getting our students where we need to be, it's a conversation that we don't need to have. If it's about a community partnership
mm-hmm.
that doesn't help us point arrows
mm-hmm.
in the direction that we all envision for our young people,
right.
we need to have a different conversation.
Right.
We need the support and we want the help, but the conversation has to be grounded in our young people. Nashville is primed, it's ready to provide what's necessary for our students. It will take this community rallying around them, making sure we have the investments, make sure we can attract and retain
right.
the best and brightest talent right here
right.
In our district. I'm a native Nashvillian, I'm here.
Right.
I'm here for the long haul, for the fight, for the complexities, for the opportunities that I know will be before us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Battle, for having this conversation with me. I think people are going to appreciate this. They're going to appreciate your candor, your transparency. And I appreciate you and the job that you've done thus far. Up until 2026, we're going to manifest it. It's going to be all greatness.
Received.
And again, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And continue the great work and continue representing for other women, black women, and just people all over the world that may want to be educators one day as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you all for watching another episode of A Slice of the Community. Check you out next time.